Tune in to The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss it. Join Cope for 2 full hours of political incorrectness, current events, gun talk, and so much more. This is Amy. Thanks for joining me for my show, Living Way Out Here. Get comfortable, grab your favorite beverage, sit back and relax. We're going to talk about the brighter, lighter side of things. No doom and gloom, just the fun stuff, starting right now.
Well, it's time to rise and shine. And start another hard work day. And get the cows in and start the milking show.
Hi everyone. Happy Monday. I hope everyone had a good day today. It is April the 3rd, and this is Amy, and this is my show, Living Way Out Here. Glad you guys could be here with me tonight. I think I might have said before, once a month we have some friends come over and play games, and we just kind of do a potluck dinner. It's just a man and his wife, and good friends of ours, and they come over and play games. Last night we played we played Clue, and that was fun. I enjoyed it. And then after that, we played Win, Lose, or Draw. I don't know it's kind of like Pictionary, but it was a lot of fun. And what you do is you have these cards of different sayings or cliches, and you can't say anything, but you draw a picture, and then the other team members have to try to guess what it is. But it was a lot of fun. We had a good time with that. Cope seemed to like that game the best, so we had a good time. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. Sometimes I let you know we see a good movie, or if I read a good book. Well, now this is a fun game that we played. So if you guys are looking for a fun game, if you like board games, it's called Win, Lose, or Draw. So anyway. All right. I don't know. This is kind of a different story. I mean, it has a good ending, but it's from Southern California, Riverside, California. And you don't see many horses in Riverside, California, because it's not horse country at all. But anyway, I guess on Saturday, this person was riding, I guess, I don't know if it was a girl or a boy or who it was, riding a horse down the sidewalk, and had just left Taco Bell, and was, I guess, eating their lunch while riding the horse, walking down the sidewalk in downtown Riverside, and there's a cover on a utility vault that was on the sidewalk, so I guess they were maybe working on it or something. Well, that collapsed when the horse walked on it. So the horse and the rider fell into this, fell 5 feet into a 5-foot deep hole. And I guess they didn't know what to do. Apparently the fire department was called on this. And so the battalion chief, they said that.
Damn.
Wow. We just had a bunch of thunder happen. Sound like a bomb. Sound like a bomb. But anyway, anyway, they're going to bring a crane in to get this horse out because they thought, oh, how are we supposed to get this horse out? They didn't know how injured the horse was, anything like that. Well, come to find out, the horse was able to get out by itself, and they did have a crane there, and but the horse got itself out, and there's some of the crews that used ropes, put a rope under its stomach and raised it till they had ropes all over, and so anyway, good ending to this story. They took the horse to the veterinarian and said the horse only suffered minor cuts to its legs, but everything was fine, and the rider was okay too, which is good. So like I said, it's kind of strange. Oh, corpse in stone right now. Weird. But anyway, I said it's very unusual to see a person riding a horse there because this is a city of about 300,000 people, Riverside is, and it's in Southern California. But happy to report that all is well and the horse is fine. There's a picture of it and it doesn't look like it's fine, but I mean it shows it getting out of the climbing out of the hole. But I think the rider was a woman. I see her standing by the, watching them get the horse out of this hole. So anyway, glad that had a happy ending. There is a, I want to read a few things to you, some trivia that is pretty interesting, I thought. I have a list of some trivia things that I'm going to share with you just, in the next couple of weeks as when I do my show, just a few at a time, but it says, I've wondered this a lot. Why do men's clothes have buttons on the right while women's clothes have buttons on the left? I've always wondered this. And it says the reason for this is that when buttons were invented, they were very expensive and they were worn primarily by the rich. And since most people are right-handed, it was easier to push buttons on the right through holes on the left. And then because wealthy women were dressed by maids, they never dressed themselves, dressmakers put the buttons on the maid's right. And that's where and ever since then, women's buttons have remained on the right-hand side. Interesting. There's another thing. Why do ships and aircraft use Mayday as their call for help? Another thing that I've often wondered about. It says this comes from the French word, I'll spell it, it's pronounced Mayday, but it's M'AIDEZ, which means help me. And it's pronounced Mayday. So it means help me. And one more thing, why the zeros, if any of you are tennis players, when there is no score, it's called love. It's not zero. It's not nothing to nothing. It's not, anyway, it's called love. So the question is, why are zero scores in tennis called love? Another thing I've often learned about. It says in France, where tennis became popular, the round zero on a scoreboard looked like an egg and was called l'œuf, which is French for the egg. When tennis was introduced to the United States, Americans naturally mispronounced it love instead of l'œuf. It was love. So, there you go. A couple little trivia information for you if you guys are into that kind of thing. I like trivia. It's pretty fun. Need to learn different things. There is in India, as you all know, India is notorious for, they have highly, highly intense monsoons and and rainy season. I mean, we have monsoons here, but nothing like India. Well, and then after that, after they have their monsoons and the rainy season in India, then they have a long dry heat for the rest of the year. So their monsoons don't last that long, but then the rest of the year it's just completely dry, no moisture at all. So for years, farmers in India, you know, they try to survive what they can with their through the dry spells, because with all their crops and that kind of thing. In fact, half of the nation's population depends on agriculture, and so they do whatever they can to try to keep their crops alive. Well, what they have done, the India farmers now, they finally learned how to overcome the drought and by planning ahead. So it's a pretty neat thing. What they're doing is they have dug irrigation ponds near farms. And what they do is they collect all the rainwater for the monsoons and the rainy season. And they save it in these big ponds and then they can use it the whole year. They had never been doing this. All of a sudden they said, hey, let's maybe we should do that. But anyway, it says the construction of these ponds has worked wonders for India's food production. Farmers in 20 villages have already constructed over 800 ponds for local use. It says that a single 100-foot pond can reportedly provide enough crop nourishment for up to 4 months. That's just one pond, and they already have 800 made. So I'm thinking that they're going to be okay for the rest of the year, and this is a good thing. And then, you know, and then the monsoon season comes the next season, and it fills all these ponds up again. So it says the ponds also dispel the need for fossil fuel-powered trains having to deliver water from more plentiful areas. So these farmers out there have learned to be a little bit self-sufficient. They have a picture of it's a nice-looking pond. I mean, it looks like they have it. It's all walled in. It looks like concrete walls around these ponds, and it looks like it sits kind of in a low area where the water can actually run in, too. If it's flooding or anything, it's going to run into this, into this area. So, very nice. And then they just take it from there to water all their crops. So that's a good thing. All right. Hold on here. Yeah, we're supposed to get, and I don't know exactly what I'm hearing, but we're supposed to be getting some kind of a weird little storm. I guess people have been talking about it all day today on the radio and news crews. What is that popping sound I'm hearing? What is that?
Hail.
Oh, it's hail.
It's soft hail. It's mostly snow, but
so it's a hail-snow mix is what we're having right now. Sounds like someone's popping popcorn in the kitchen. About it was anyway. But let's see here. Let me tell you. It says the driver was pulled over by a police officer for speeding. As the officer was writing a ticket, he noticed several machetes in the car. What are those for? He asked suspiciously. I'm a juggler, the man replied. I use those in my act. Well, show me, the officer demanded, still a little unsure. So he got out the machetes and started juggling them, first three, then more, finally juggling seven machetes at a time, overhand, underhand, behind the back. And he put on quite a dazzling show, and he amazed this police officer. Just then another car passed by. The driver did a double take at what was going on the side of the road, this guy juggling these machetes, and he looked at his wife. He said, that's it. I have got to give up the drink. Just look at the sobriety test they're giving now. So, all right. Yeah, let's see here. I believe that is all that I have for tonight. So a short night for me, but I think I was talking about the weather real quick. Like I said, we're supposed to have, well, we are right now having snow and hail mixture, right? And then I guess it's supposed to be really nice for the rest of the week. Well, not really nice, but the high for the week, I think, is on Thursday. It's supposed to be 64 degrees. It's going to be the warmest all week. But with the snow, it's not supposed to last very long, but it's just a real small, kind of a weird little storm coming in that they were talking about on the news that to batten down the hatches because it's becoming really heavy winds and bringing some snow, and I guess that's happening already right now. So anyway, it looks like Radio Doc's doing the same thing. He said it's been raining off and on for there for 2 days with periods of sleet and snow mixed in. So I think that's what we're going to be experiencing here in the next couple of days, it sounds like. So anyway, all right, well, I will leave you guys. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate it. Cope will be in next. He'll be up here. And I'll see you next week. Good night.
That's my show for this evening. Thanks for tuning in. My goal is to help us remember that there is still good out there. We just need to look for it. Join me next Friday evening for more fun, interesting, and crazy stories on Living Way Out Here. I can read the writing on the wall. Go to throw. Okay, stay tuned. Cope is coming up next with Liberty Lounge.
I got rice cooking in the microwave. Got a 3-day beard I don't plan to shave. And it's a goofy thing, but I just gotta say, hey, I'm doing alright. Yeah, I think I'll make me some homemade soup. Feeling pretty good, and that's the truth. It's neither drink nor drug induced. No, I'm just doing alright. And it's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining when I close my eyes. There's some hard times in the neighborhood, but why can't every day be just this good? Oh, yeah. It's been 15 years since I left home. Up to every seed I'd sown. Give it my best and then I left it alone. I hope they're doing alright. Now I look in the mirror and what do I see? A long wolf there staring back at me. Long in the tooth but harmless as can be. Lord, I guess he's doing alright. And it's a great day. Sometimes it's lonely, sometimes it's only me and the shadows that fill this room. Sometimes I'm falling, desperately calling. Tattoo. I'll take my old Harley for a 3-day cruise. Might even grow me a Fu Manchu. And it's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining when I close my eyes. There's some hard times in the neighborhood, but why can't every day be just this good? It's a great day. Shining when I close my eyes. There's some heart.
And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
All right, I made it. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the 3rd of April. It's a Monday. Remember our, hang on just a minute, we'll get all that nonsense stopped there. Remember our format is changing here. Amy's going to be coming on for whatever time that she can afford to let us have on Monday evenings, and I'm going to take over the rest of it. So as it stands tonight, we got a half hour almost out of her, so as I said, we was up awfully late last night and had a lot of fun. But anyway, she's about wiped out, and she's got some other things that she needs to get done tonight, so we'll excuse her for the rest of her show. Okay, here's, as she said, I don't know if any of you have just joined, it's snowing and hailing and wind blowing and raining and carrying on. It's cold and just pretty nasty night out there tonight. And it's supposed to be nice tomorrow, though. So that's good. I've got a couple of decks I need to build tomorrow. Or start on, anyway. You know, I thought we'd do some stuff here. Little off topic here from what we normally do. But I got to thinking about this, and there's a few things. One of them, I got to thinking about it when there was, we did a song Friday night, an old Glenn Campbell song. Was it Friday night? Yeah. Old Glenn Campbell song, God, I Love My Truck. And, no, was that it? Which one was it? I forgot which song it was. It had to do with the car. I don't think it was I Love My Truck. Yes, it was. When he said, you know, it starts when the choke don't stick or whatever. And I got to thinking about how many millennials that have no earthly idea what that even means. And I got to thinking about the options, the things that we had on the older cars that today are completely obsolete, and you know, either people don't know what they are, or they don't want them, then don't have any idea what we're talking about. Doc, I was going to do some machete juggling right there, but I decided not to. I can't even juggle with two tennis balls. I can't even hardly juggle one tennis ball. So I'm probably going to leave the machetes for the experts. So some of you listening right now, I think most of you are more closer to my age group and older, a few a little younger, but I think most of you probably know what the choke is on it. Now, they still have chokes on, you know, lots of generators and lawn mowers and all that stuff, but on a vehicle, how many people out there right now that are, say, what, 25, maybe even close to 30 years old, that wouldn't have the foggiest notion how to start a car if they had to pull the choke on it? And remember when our cup holders, you know, all cars now have multiple cup holders, deep, wide, you know, hold water bottles and Coke cans and wide beer cans or whatever you're doing, very well. You remember what they were back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, probably up even into the 80s, possibly. Yeah, no, not into the 80s, I don't think. Maybe up to the 70s, so. What was our cup holders like in those days, you remember? Anybody got an idea? Roddy, Radio Doc, you ought to know. Doc, Manny, you'd remember these things. What were our cup holders like in the 60s? Where'd you have them on your vehicles? Let me check and make sure my sound is working here. Okay, yeah, we should be doing good. All right. Let's hear it. Where was our cup holders at? And I'm waiting. Nobody knows. Everybody's trying to look it up on the internet. Remember we used to fold your glove box lid down? And you had these little indentations that were a quarter of an inch deep. Those cup holders only worked when you were sitting still at the drive-in theater. What's a drive-in theater, you say? Well, we won't get into that right now. But there was two of them on most cars that I saw. And I had several trucks with those cup holders. But do you remember those? Just little dents on the inside of the glove box lid. And Doc, I still have one of those little plastic deals from a bar in Forsyth, Montana. Little plastic cup holders that you hang Doc's got it right. He had her in the passenger seat. That's right. But they had the little plastic cup holders. I thought those were cooler than heck. That was just the greatest thing. And but no, they had the ones that came with the car were in the glove box lid. And of course, you couldn't set anything down there while you were moving at all. I remember when radial tires first came out. Anybody get your first, remember your first radial tires? That was, it was so easy to tell. If you took bias ply tires off of a truck or a car and went down to the gas station and had radial tires put on it, and then go and take your same trip that you normally do up to the store or school or beer joint or whatever. When you went around that first corner, you could tell that there was a dramatic difference in the tires. Dramatic difference. It felt like the tires on the outside were airing up as you went around the corner, and felt like you were trying to keep the vehicle level while you were going around the corner. It was the weirdest thing when I got my first set of radials. And they were, and of course, I don't even know if they make bias ply tires anymore, but that was pretty cool. There was, what was some of the, do you remember the slots in the bumpers? Little slots about, what were they? 3/8 of an inch wide, maybe, and about an inch and a quarter long. And they were the vertical slots, one on each side of the bumper, right about probably just to the inside of the headlights. Same thing on the rear bumper. Remember those? They don't do those anymore. Those are for bumper jacks. The bumper jack that was bolted down in your trunk or under your seat in your pickup. No, they didn't have those for pickups. I tell you, scratch that. But they had these little bumper jacks that had little nub and little knob on it that was fit in those slots and jacked your car up. That's how you didn't have to crawl underneath it and try to find a place to put the jack and all that. Minnie says she's just happy if she get her car to run, period. But that may have only been in General Motors cars. Everybody else, I think, was using those old scissor jacks. Boy, those were fun. Until your bumper started rusting out or something like that, the little ones worked. And do you remember your windshield washer bags when the windshield washers first came out? They are now in plastic jugs with lids on them, plastic container that you can usually kind of see through and see how much windshield washer flow. Well, the first ones were a plastic or a rubber bag, looked kind of like a what was those bags you see? All cartoon characters in the old days put on. Remember Jinx? Always had one of those bags on his head and he's hung over. That's kind of what these bags were like. I don't remember. I think Ford may have been one of the first ones to do that. Looked like a colostomy bag. And then what? Can you imagine nowadays having to roll up your own windows? You remember when there were two roller upper things on there? You had one on some of the car. I think it was Chrysler, probably. Might have been some Fords, but they had two cranks. One of them was for the wing window, the little vent window, and the other one was for your main big window. There wasn't a lot of those, and they didn't last very long. And then vent windows, period. How many of you have vent windows now? I can tell you that not a single one of you do, unless you have some of the older cars. Many I didn't even know they had them that late. I don't know, I haven't seen any roll-up windows in a long time. But what they did do, they got rid of those vent windows completely, and that was a bad idea. They should have kept those. That was the way to go. Anyway, there's not a whole lot of the roll-up ones left anymore, and there's people out there that have never seen one. A lot of people out there that have never seen one before. And remember in the, when was it? When did they start with those? They may have, Corvette may have been the first one to do this. I don't remember who it was. Corvette, GTOs, maybe. And that was the hideaway headlights. You turn the headlights off and they turn a little trap door deal and the headlights disappear. Yeah, that was a wonderful idea until it didn't work anymore. And it wasn't so great because the lights didn't work. But it was made for a much cleaner, more aerodynamic look, I guess, on some of the sports cars and stuff. But those didn't last too long either. I think they had too much trouble. Some of them had worked on a vacuum. And the vacuum booster, that was a very, very poor idea. The electrical ones, I think, were probably more reliable. The vacuum ones, maybe not so much. If you had a vacuum leak or, you know, vacuum hose pulled off or rotted, do whatever happened, then you had a problem with getting your headlights. You could turn them on. But so those little doors didn't work, and you were out of luck. I imagine most of you remember the older cars that had the gas tank under the license plate in the back. You pull up to the gas pump, you had to pull up far enough to... You took the license plate down, take the gas cap off, and if you played your cards just right, you could put that gas cap in there, and it would hold the license plate back so you didn't have to sit there and fight it while you were filling it up with gas. You know, in those days also, you couldn't put $20 worth of gas in a car. You just couldn't. Gas was, you know, 35 cents a gallon, 25 cents a gallon, you know, 38 cents, 40 cents, whatever it was. There's no way you could put $20 worth of gas in a car. I remember the first car. It was a Cadillac, Eldorado, I think. Big old boat. And that was the first time I ever saw a car that you could put $20 worth of gas in. Of course, gas was going up a little bit. I don't remember what the price of it was at the time, but I just marveled at the fact that you could put $20 worth of gas in a car. And, yeah, Radio Doc, they never should have done away with that. That was a very poor idea, I think. You know, they preach, talking about the high and low beam headlight button on the floorboard. That was the best place for them. They preach to, keep your hands at, 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. And then they put the stupid dimmer switch in the, on the turn signal switch. So, you know, if you're in the middle of turning or doing something, you have to take your hands off to dim the lights. And you're in the middle of a curve. That's not a great idea. If it was over on the, floor, piece of cake. Just move your foot. It didn't affect your steering, your coordination, what was going on, topside. And you just kind of move your, pivot your foot over on your heel and hit the dimmer switch. Only problem with the dimmer switch is that once people learned this, it was an easy fix. But when those things would corrode and rust from, you know, some of them would come in actually through the floorboard when they'd rust out a little bit, or, you know, any moisture that got in there, whether it was from whatever, they'd corrode in there, and when they did, the lights wouldn't work, and people would go nuts. They'd try to, you know, they'd look at the getting new bulbs. They'd look at the light switch itself. And 9 times out of 10, it was that stupid dimmer switch. All you got to do is take that out, unplug it, clean it up, and polish those little spades up in there and plug it back in, and it'd usually work fine. If it didn't, then you go spend $5 and get you another one, and you'd be in good shape. A lot of that stuff was so much easier. Look at the wiring harnesses that they have nowadays in cars. And some of these cars, it's literally, it's practically impossible for the shade tree mechanic, you know, for a guy to do it, fix those on his own cars. It's quite a deal. Have you noticed that they've changed that now? I think Amy mentioned this once on her show a long time ago. If you look at you go out there and a lot of these newer cars, I don't remember what year they started it, but if you go out there and look, there's on your gas gauge, somewhere on there, usually I think it's at the bottom of the gas gauge, there's a little arrow, a little triangle pointing to one side or the other. And whatever side it's pointing to is what side your gas gauge, your gas filler is on, your gas cap. So if you're driving a new car or somebody else's car that you're not familiar with or whatever, then just when you get to pull up to the gas station, there's a video out there on YouTube where this silly woman pulls up to the gas pump, she gets out and looks, and that's on the wrong side. So she gets out, backs up, turns around, pulls back in, pulls up on the other side, and since she turned around, it's still on the other side. And she drove around there for 10 minutes trying to figure out how to get that thing. This was all caught on the surveillance video. But anyway, you can avoid that just by looking down at your gas gauge, and there's a little triangle, a little arrow that points to the side that the gas deal is on. And now, how many functions now does your turn signal knob have? It dims the lights, sets the cruise control, turns the cruise control off, speeds it up, slows it down. You've got your windshield wipers on a lot of them, and with the windshield wiper comes the, the intermittent, on and off there, the mist control, all this stuff on your dimmer switch, on your turn signal switch. And it used to be, I don't know if it's not too bad. What about your steering wheel? steering wheel on my truck will, let's see. I've got all these controls on it. It tells me what my gas mileage, my fuel mileage is, what the average is, what the instant fuel mileage is. I can turn the radio up and down, change channels, change, you know, AM, FM, all this stuff on the steering wheel. And over on the, you know, you used to actually have to bend over just a little bit and reach down and pull a knob on the dashboard to do some of that stuff. Now it's all on one button. A little bit, remember when, shoulder harnesses, shoulder belts used to be optional? It was not to say it was a bad idea. Nobody elected that option, but, it was optional. And they had these little flat buttons on there that, you could take and hook your shoulder harness up. Of course, the old original ones, the first ones, you couldn't lean forward. And when you got it buttoned in, there you were. That was it. You were done. If you needed to reach something up on the dash, you had to undo the belt, the shoulder harness. Reach forward, take care of your business, lean back, and hook it back up. Of course, if you left it loose enough that you could reach anything on the front, if you ever hit anything, it would tear you in half. But, Minnie, that's right. That's exactly what they've tried to do here, is to keep your eyes on. But I'm not so sure if I understand that that's the whole premise of this deal here, is to keep your eyes on the road. But when you have one little switch that does nine things, you've got to look at the little icons and the little arrows and all that stuff. I want to try to figure out what it is. It was so much easier to me just to reach down, pull the button on the dash. And Radio Doc, I very much remember when seatbelts were not required. Catapon joined us. Welcome. Been a while since I've seen you in here. But, there was a time when seatbelts were not required. There was a time when car seats were not required for kids. I mean, usually the kids were standing up in the seat, in the front. And of course, if you ever hit anything, then they ate the dashboard and went through the windshield or whatever. So things have definitely changed. Remember the automatic shoulder harnesses? After a little while, when they weren't mandatory, but it was optional, you'd get this. And how many of you remember these seat belts that, when you open the door, this shoulder harness run down on a little rail up there. You couldn't get in the car without the shoulder harness. As soon as you get in and shut the door, then this thing goes, boom, goes back up, stop, locks in place. Remember those? What a pain in the neck. They didn't last long. There wasn't a lot of those little motorized shoulder harnesses there. I think that was a stupid idea. But the best thing that happened to them was to take a pocket knife to them, just get them out and throw them away. So now, how much studying do you have to do to be able to operate your own radio? Look at all the options that you have. It used to be, originally they were just AM only. And then there was some AM, FM, and it was just turn it on, turn it off, turn it up, turn it down, and change the channel. And remember the buttons on the old radios? When you wanted to set it in place, you'd turn it, and you'd finally get it tuned in, get it where you want it, and then you reach down and grab the button that you wanted, pull the button out, pull it all the way out until it stopped, and then push it back in. And that locked your station in place there. And a lot of times that would only get you close after you get out of town a little ways and it starts fading. That would get you close, but then you have to take the knob anyway and tune it in just a little so you don't lose it completely. So simple in those days. And I don't remember when they stopped it. And then they put cassette players on. How cool? No, then they put 8-track players on. And then cassettes. That was, then technology came in. That's right, Radio Dawkins. And we've been losing ground ever since. There's, and this is a point that many made a while ago, trying to keep your eyes on it. Where was the radio? Well, radio, not too much different placement. He's usually right in the center of the dash. And it was, I can reach my radio buttons now without leaning forward or anything, but you used to have to lean forward, which meant also that you had to undo your shoulder harness because there was no give in them. There was no automatic, what's call it there. But I can reach now. I don't have to reach my radio anymore. I can, but I don't have to because everything's on my stupid steering wheel. Of course, I can't remember any of that. But, and, yeah, Radio Doc, I remember very well those days when we used to listen to KOMA out of Oklahoma City. And it was our rock station of the day. Then it went to country years later for a little while. And I believe now it's an oldies station. I think now it's playing the stuff that used to be current when we used to listen to it back in the 70s. But that happened. Remember, let's see who gets this one. Where was Wolfman Jack's home station? Let's see if he, of course, had. I'll wait for a second here. Around everybody can look that up on Google if you. Yeah, cruise control is awesome, Minnie. I'm a big fan of cruise control. Anybody remember where Wolfman Jack was? Of course, he may have been. I guess he was probably syndicated, probably on other stations as well. The one that I remember him from was X-Rock 80. Now, and I know good and well Radio Doc listened to X-Rock 80 out of El Paso, Texas. And that's where I always heard Wolfman Jack. That was a great station. It was pretty strong. You could hear it all the way up into northern New Mexico pretty regular after dark. That was the thing that if you wanted to listen to radio stations a long ways away, you had to wait till after dark. You know, now you can listen to like KOB out of Albuquerque. You can listen to that, you know, 300 miles away, you know, if you get in the right place. But back then, you couldn't hear any of those. You know, KOMA was a 50,000 watt station. And after dark, it would start coming in really well, and it would actually come in better than the Albuquerque stations in some parts of New Mexico. Anyway, I don't know how we got. Speaking of that very thing, guess what's going to happen this Friday? This Friday, we're going to go where we have never really gone before for Liberty Lounge. We've done 70s rock. We've done, we did a gospel singing. We've done several different themes. But this Friday, coming up this week, Liberty Lounge, 50s and 60s rock. We are not going to intentionally get into the 70s unless I just happen to, you know, not know when one came out and do it by accident. But it's going to be all 50s and 60s. This is going to go back to, you know, happy days and all that kind of stuff. And I've just got a hankering to do that. So I think that's what we're going to do this week. So give me a few minutes and we'll come back and talk about something else for a little while. Thank you.
That's what I like to see, bullseyes every time. And you can do the same thing with Byard Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Byard Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Byard Barrel specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10-22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at ByardBarrels.com. That's BeyerBarrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
About California, it don't matter at all where you played before. California's a brand new game. Trying to be a hero, winding up a zero, can scar a man forever. Right down to your soul. Living on the spotlight can kill a man outright. Cause everything that glitters is not gold. And all the
another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
That ain't country. That ain't country.
All right, we're back. So, we've kind of sidestepped everything that we normally do on the Shooting Bench with this other stuff. I've been wanting to do that for some reason here for a little while. Some of you are probably familiar with Shannon's Law here in Arizona. That is a law that makes it illegal to shoot up in the air. Let's see, let me make sure there was another one that's named after a little girl too that had to do the shooting. Let me see here. There was a, Shannon's Law is the one that regulates firing of guns in or near city limits. So They have been trying to back off of that a little bit, trying to narrow the scope of that just a little. And this is the president of the Senate president, Steve Yarbrough, said he won't even hear it. He said the Senate is not going to consider this bill. I was trying to make that a little easier, a little, for people that fire one accidentally. If you have an accidental discharge, even if no one gets hurt, you can, I don't know if it's a felony, I think it is a felony. But he says it's important to have this law in place to deter folks from firing weapons in these circumstances, even accidentally. You know, if you could be deterred from having an accident simply by passing a law, good Lord, there'd never be another car wreck in the world, because they've passed all these laws and seat belts and putting your controls where you can reach them without taking your eyes off the road and all of this kind of stuff. You've got to have the tires just right, and the windshield's got to be clean, no cracks, and you turn signals and headlights and dim your lights and all this kind of stuff. If it was that simple to avoid an accident just by passing a law, then there would never be another car wreck. But anyway, that, oh yeah, it is. Shannon's Law is, it says to, that you can't fire guns in and around city limits, but it does say that she was the one that was struck by a bullet that hit in the head when, in 1999, 14 years old, was killed when a bullet just fell out of the sky, hit her in the head while she's talking on the phone in her backyard. And never did find out who did it, but this law makes it a felony to negligently fire a gun inside the city limits. Now, negligently is one thing; accidentally is a complete another deal. But they this House Bill 2287 would bar prosecutors from pursuing Class 6 felony charges against someone who claimed to have fired the gun accidentally. It now. Obviously, if someone goofing around and it went off by accident, but it was negligent because you were goofing around showing people or something and killed the kid next door. Yeah, you do need to have some kind of consequences for that, I think. But This law instead proposed that the state would have to prove that the defendant intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly fired the gun. So it'd be the burden of proof would lie on the state that they would have to prove that happened. And it wasn't just the fact of, you leaned the gun up in a corner or against the wall and it fell over and went off. In that case, now people can be charged with a felony here in Arizona. And the bill that they're introducing or tried to introduce before the Senate president said, no, hell no, we're not even going to listen to that. I don't want anything to do with it. It would weaken, in his mind, would weaken Shannon's Law a little bit, make it more difficult to charge somebody. Like, the whole idea is simply to charge someone. He also said, the Senate president said, I think it's solid public policy. I don't see any reason to water it down or weaken the law. He said, accidents are an unfortunate fact of life. People have hundreds of automobile accidents in the Phoenix area every day, yet we rarely treat them as criminals, depending on the circumstances. A felony charge for accidental discharge is a very rare event, but it can and does happen. And the Senate president happens to be an attorney, so that doesn't make it any better. So he's not seen any evidence that the state is bringing felony charges against individuals who accidentally discharge their weapons. The Senate's going to stand by the provisions of Shannon's Law. I think it's solid public policy. I don't see any reason to water it down and weaken it. That's what I said a while ago. And, of course, Shannon's family is lobbying against the bill. So the basic point is a gun owner should be responsible, and that's what Shannon's law is all about. So, anyway, don't look like that's going to... I'm okay with, you know, shooting up in the air in town. That's, I mean, I'm not okay with it. I'm okay with that being, prohibited. Yeah, too many people get injured every year by bullets falling out of the sky. Every single year there's something... a near miss or an accident of some kind. I've told you about the little girl in Albuquerque quite a few years ago, 5 years old. A bullet fell out of the sky on New Year's Eve, and it was actually a 7.62 with 39, an AK-47 bullet, or SKS or whatever, is that caliber anyway. Fell out, went through the top of her head, lodged in her shoulder. She had learned to walk and talk and eat and do everything else again. She did survive, and I think she's, as far as I know, she's normal now, but she had a little break from normalcy there while she was trying to learn to do everything all over again. But Senate's not even going to hear about it, and I'm all for loosening it up a little bit, too, where it's not, where people were obvious accidents are not included in this. So anyway, I got to looking into some of the thing now that I'm thinking about getting a little older. Not that I am yet, but I've thought about it. Looking at some of the things that I probably ought to be doing that I haven't done, and one of those things is kind of watching what I eat a little more. And I do watch it. I just watch too much of it. What I need to do is try to change a few of those things a little bit. And Amy's all about helping me do that. So get to worried about... high cholesterol and heart attacks and strokes and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's about time to start using a little better sense on that and quit filling up on donuts and brownies and Cokes and all that. I haven't said I'm going to change it yet, but I thought about it. Matter of fact, that reminds me, I need to go find, let's see here. I gotta go find something for you. We're gonna play it. I've only played it once or twice. And I think it's fitting right now, but only if I can find it. So let's see if that is, where would I put it? Maybe right there. See what y'all think. I don't see it yet. No, I don't know what I did with it. I'll find it for you. It was a neat deal. It had to do with just exactly that kind of thing here. But looks like I've misplaced it. Well, it was a great idea anyway. Nope, haven't a clue. Well, I'll find it one of these days. All right, let me get my crystal ball fired up here again. My crystal ball is getting a little cluttered up. I gotta get some of this stuff squared away here. You know, this was something I've had this on standby here for the longest time, probably 4 months. I've had this here, and this is This is kind of like our old car deal. It's just a little bit of trivia for you. Kind of interesting, though. It's, well, I think what I'm going to do, I've got some others I want to look up here. I was putting together a list of, well, I can't tell you what I was going to, maybe I'll just shut up here before I ruin it. I've got the deal pulled up here, but I've got to do a little bit more research on it. I think I'm going to leave that for right now. All right, let's go back. Let's go back to where we were at. Start over. You guys, crystal ball as slow as mine? Here in just 3 days ago, four years old, got suspended for 7 days from school for having an empty .22 shell in his pocket. Good grief. When I was a kid, if they suspended every little boy and some little girls that had an empty cartridge case in their pocket, hell, we carried full ones now. It didn't make any difference to school. But if they suspended everyone that had an empty cartridge or even the full cartridge, there wouldn't be any school some days. There wouldn't be anything there but staff. Hell, half the staff would have to get suspended. This, hang on a minute, I just messed it up here. Well, shoot, let me go back here and find it again. There it is. Okay. 4-year-old boy suspended in Troy, Illinois school for a week after one of his teachers had spent shell casing. Said, I was met by, this lady was called at her work. Said, I never thought this was happening. Today I picked up my happy little 4-year-old from preschool at a place called A Place to Grow in Troy, Illinois. My arrival was met with a stone-faced teacher who told me that Hunter, who was the name of the kid, had brought a shotgun bullet to school. Can you believe that? A shotgun bullet. 4-year-old. What is a 4-year-old doing with shotgun bullets anyway? And the lady said she was horrified. My kid who just spent the weekend learning gun safety? Well, then I was escorted to the office for a sit-down visit and was handed a tiny .22 empty brass casing. Not actually a shotgun bullet. It was a empty casing. Said her son had recently gone to the range with grandfather, who was a police officer, and at some point during the trip, the boy picked up a casing and put it in his pocket. They said neither her or her husband were aware the son had the casing. To him, it was just something he thought was neat and wanted to share with his friends. Not duh, obviously. But school officials said the boy violated school policy, and according to a letter sent home to his parents, he has repeatedly violated the no weapons policy by playing with make-believe guns made out of sticks and other such items. Now, there's another time. If we'd all been kicked out for playing cops and robbers with guns made out of tree branches and whatnot, there wouldn't be no school. We'd all gone home. The lady, the mother, said she understands the concern, and she feels like the school's reaction to the casing isn't teaching her son about safety, but rather intolerance. Yeah, of course, school officials refused to talk with reporters, so... that's the only information I have. If anybody wanted to call and express your concern, this was in Troy, Illinois, and the name of the school was A Place to Grow. Yeah, A Place to Grow, Troy, Illinois. Doc, I can't imagine what else you would use a shotgun bullet for. Of course, you use it in .22. I mean, gee, that's common sense. I'm sure that kid learned that in the gun safety class. Anyway, there's if you guys have seen the deal on the internet, on Facebook, about them releasing 90 kangaroos in Wyoming. Well, I'm sure you might have guessed that this was an April Fool's hoax. They said the Wyoming Wild Game Department, partnering with the Wyoming Migration Initiative, had released the first of 5 planned batches of 90 antelope kangaroos into the Wyoming outdoors. So, anyway, it was just an April Fool's joke, and that was, well, I'm sure most of you figured that out. If you saw the picture, it looked pretty real. It showed people standing around there with cameras, and there's biologists holding on to the kangaroo, and it looks like one gal's got a hold of the kangaroo's tail. But just a wee little bit of research shows that the picture was in fact taken in Wyoming. But some very sharp and clever individual that's good with Photoshop has taken the mule deer out of the picture that used to be there and replaced it with a kangaroo. And it looks pretty real. You can look now, you can tell a couple of things. If you look at the girl's hands, they're supposed to be around the tail. If you look real close, actually, they're not. But they took the mule deer out of there and replaced it with a kangaroo, and it looks like they're planting kangaroos in Wyoming. Well. Doc, I got you there. I would certainly understand that. I'd take kangaroos over Muslims any day. Now, here's one right out of another one out of the beautiful state of Arizona. This was a gal. This wasn't a third grader or a seventh grader. All right. This girl is at Northern Arizona University. I'm embarrassed to even read this. Her grade was docked 1 point for using the word mankind in a paper that she was writing. You believe that? Penalized 1 point out of a possible 50 by English professor Dr. Ann Scott for not using a gender-neutral term. Oh, shut up, you freaking morons. The girl said she had a discussion with Scott, who claimed that the... it wasn't the girl either. The girl had a discussion with Scott, who claimed that that type of gendered language is sexist, oppressive, and anti-woman. And this professor, I think, is anti-smart. What a retard. I can't even believe that. So if you're in college or school, you're writing a term paper or something, do not use the word mankind. Sexist individual, you. Radio doc. We look back at it like it was a big deal now. 13, 14-year-old stop at the mom-and-pop convenience store and buy boxes of 22 shells and then walking right through the middle of town to an old gravel pit or something to shoot with their 22s. We all did. And it was nothing. We didn't think about it. We never dreamed in those days, never thought once that we'd ever be having this conversation, that it would ever be unacceptable to people, that it would ever be an issue. I mean, you take guns to school, as long as you leave them in the principal's office, even when I was in junior high, as late as junior high. No, was that junior high? I think it was high school. Might have been 10th grade. We could still, without any repercussions whatsoever, not a word said by nobody cared. Nobody noticed. It was a non-issue. It was as much of a non-issue as having a jack in the back of your truck or a screwdriver. or a can of Coke, you know. So he's got a .22 rifle on the rack. So what? I didn't notice. I mean, it's just, so does everybody else. Big deal. Didn't think anything of it. Nothing. And here this kid takes an empty casing in school. Hell, we could take a whole box of 30-30s or 22s or whatever, 20-12, 20-gauge shotgun shells, whatever the case is, into class and talk about, yeah, this is cool to take show and tell. This is what I use. Yeah. And, killed a jackrabbit yesterday. Nobody cared. We're due for a reset, ladles and jelly spoons. Something needs to happen, and it needs to happen soon. We really need to try to get our country back some way or another. Not sure how or if or when this reset is going to take place, but it needs to take place some way or another. I suppose we'll see something happen. There's, I'm going to save this one for Wednesday night. We've got a few gun things we need to share with you on Wednesday night. Wednesday's going to try to be our mostly gun night, but there's so many things happening that may not be. May not be carved in stone here. Remember here, what was it, a year, 2 years ago maybe? That we found out that Glock was being, Gaston Glock, with all the company, was being sued by his ex-wife. They've been accused of racketeering, money laundering, fraud, and all this and the other. Well, Glock has been cleared of all that. The lawsuit was apparently was thrown out, and all of his partners and everything is all. They said the woman said that they'd used a web of fictitious legal relationships, offshore business entities, excuse me, and international transactions to steal and launder funds with the intention of keeping money and assets hidden from her. Well, it sounds like she was kind of paranoid about the whole thing. He was married to her when he founded Glock to begin with, and that was in 1963. Now, before anybody goes up and talks about Glock's didn't come out till 85, you got to remember when Glock first started the company, he was not a gun person. He made curtain rods and I don't remember what all else, a pretty mundane crap, and got into guns in 82 or 83 or something like that. No. But they... It wasn't until 1980, I guess it says, by 82, they had the final design for the new gun, you know. And, of course, the rest of that is history, but it says that, it says Glock now commands 65% of the market share for U.S. law enforcement agencies. We knew that. It's going to maybe down a little bit because I think it was 70% 10 years ago. Anyway, says the company has an estimated annual revenue of $400 million. Wow. Anyway, after 50 years of marriage, Glock, who is now 85, in 2011 he was 85, divorced her, cut ties with three grown children, and married a 31-year-old woman, a nurse that helped him right after a stroke in 2008. And I suppose someone that makes $400 million a year or whatever he gets out of that probably could attract a 31-year-old woman. Anyway, she is seeking $500 million-plus unspecified punitive damages and attorney fees. Well, anyway, now that story is from 2014. That's when this all started. But apparently now this has been thrown out just in the last this week, I think it was thrown out. I have another story here somewhere. I'll find that for you. Yeah, I bet you all the 1911 makers just wish they were as successful as they once were. Yeah, no doubt about it. But they have since been put in their place. And I'm okay with that. All right, well, let's see. I think we need to take another little break here. And
I'll be back. Thank you. nobody will stand with you if you don't stand. God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom? God can't stand with a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And at that moment, that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand.
Mary took to running with a traveling man. Left her mama crying with her head in her hands. Such a sad case, so broken hearted. She said, Mama, gotta go, gotta get out of here, gotta get out of town, tired of hanging around. I gotta roll on between the ditches. Just an ordinary story about the way things go round and around. Nobody knows, but the highway goes on forever. That old highway rolls on forever. Lord, she never would have done it if she hadn't got drunk, if she hadn't started running with a traveling man, if she hadn't started taking those crazy chances. She said, daughter, let me tell you about the traveling kind. Everywhere he's going such a very short time. He'll be long gone before you know it. He'll be long gone before you know it. She said, never have I known it when it felt so good. Never have I knew it when I knew I could. Never have I done it when it looked so right. Leaving Louisiana in the broad daylight. This is down in the swamp land, anything goes. It's alligator bait and the bars don't close. Down in Louisiana. Did you ever see a Cajun when he really got mad? When he really got trouble like a daughter gone bad? It gets real hot down in Louisiana. The stranger better move it or he's gonna get killed. He's gonna have to get it or a shotgun will. It ain't no time for late speeches. There ain't no time for late speeches.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
That ain't country. That ain't country.
Yeah, we trust you.
Brand new story out of Marietta, Georgia. Remember, what was it, one day last week we talked about, we talked about the people that were stealing guns from train cars in, you know, parked in, you know, wherever they park train cars, these rail yards here. Well, now there's been two guys out of Georgia here that worked for a freight company out of Marietta, Georgia. Marietta's just north of Atlanta. And said they stole 45 Smith & Wesson firearms
in March, just last month, March 13th and 14th. And so they're filling up bags with forklifts and driving the forklifts to the employee parking lot. Okay, by filling up bags with forklifts and then, okay. Anyway, they had, according to the booking records, these two guys, one of them 58 years old, the other two both booked on felony theft charges. Said they stole 45 Smith & Wesson firearms, and the theft was realized when a box listed to contain a firearm showed up empty in Alabama. Following up on surveillance video at the shipping location, they managed to get a warrant for the person's home there and discovered 10 of the stolen guns. Anyway, they had... the other one was arrested, let's see, one of them on $55,000 bond, the other one on $38,000. But they, we talked about, it's been some time back, we talked about the cartel that had come in here, and some people think they were furnished with AK-47. I'm not talking about Fast and Furious. This was way, way before Fast and Furious. But they managed to steal or possibly have been furnished by government officials at some level hundreds of AK-47s. This was in California. And, stolen guns is getting to be it's always been a hot item in anywhere in the country, ever since guns were invented. But I think we're starting to see now quite a surge here in the number of guns that are being stolen. And, so I don't know. Let's see what all comes out of this. I think there's more things in the works here than we know. We'll find out shortly, I imagine. Let's see here. Let me get here and try to sort some of these out here. Don't need that one. Now, this guy here, we heard the story about the guy that viewed. Maybe I didn't talk about that. I don't think I have talked about that yet. But I may have. I don't remember. Let's talk about it briefly. There was a kid that was, oh, heck. My daughter's coming home from a track meet down south, and I just got a text that they're being slowed down there because of the snow. So they're going to be a little later than regular. You guys remember May 16th, 2 years ago, we had over 5 inches of snow. So having it in first April is not out of the question at all. But anyway, there's we talked about the kid that killed 3 intruders with an AR-15. There's been, like I said, I'm not going to go into detail because I don't remember if I talked about it or not, but 3 teenagers come into this kid's house. Well, kid, he's 19 years old, I guess, kid to me. And brass knuckles, mask over their face, broke in the back door. A kid grabbed his AR-15, lit him up, killed all 3 of them. And, of course, the families now are saying that it wasn't fair. Kid having an AR-15, this wasn't fair. It wasn't a fair fight. Well, I don't know that there's anything that says that a self-defense situation like that, that it needs to be fair. I think we look for those advantages that keeps it from being fair. I'm not interested in a fair fight when it comes to something like it. Anyway. So that one was very much justified, and I think everybody agreed on that. But here's another one. This guy, He had, this was up in Washington State, actually. He was arrested this, I think it was, let me look here, this last Saturday, day before yesterday. After he shot and killed an intruder who was taking a shower in his home. Well, you might say that that's okay. Ordinarily, you know, depending on, you know, castle doctrine laws and make my day laws and stuff like that, maybe it would be. However, the thing that made this, the guy's been arrested, the homeowner's been arrested, he shot and killed a guy that was taking a shower in his house. Both of these people, let's see, the one who was killed was out of Bothell, Idaho, Washington, Dayton. The homeowner has two pieces of property that sit next to each other. One of them has a house that he lives in, and he runs an internet-based business out of a home on the other piece of property. This is where the shooting occurred. Now, he happened to got home to do some work for his business. He noticed a window screen out in the yard, and someone had forced open the front door. The guy went inside, found another man in his shower. They exchanged words. Here's where it got bad. They exchanged words, and the homeowner left. He went home, got a firearm, and came back. That was where he went wrong. If he would have been wearing one and come in and confronted someone in the house, it probably would have gone a whole lot better, depending on their if they have castle doctrine or stand your ground laws. But he went home, got a firearm, and came back, fired multiple rounds into the shower, and killed the guy. The technical term for that is bad. Don't get in an argument with somebody and know that. Go home and get a gun and come back. If you have time to leave, you can step out in the yard and call 911 and let those people handle it. Those people that we paid to take care of stuff like that, let them do it. Let them take the risk. Let them worry about the lawsuits and the courts and all that stuff. All you need to do is make a phone call. This was exceedingly negligent. This was exceedingly wrong. And I try to make that very, very clear in my classes that this is a no-no. This is not what you do. It says that he's not sure how long that the guy had been. The guy called 911 and told him he just shot and killed a guy. And they said it's not clear how long he'd been inside there. But they say that they didn't believe the homeowner gave him any warning before he fired his gun. Now, it might have changed a little bit if he had gone and got the gun, come back and said, I have a gun, get out of my house. Here's a towel, beat it. But he just come in and went to blazing away. So I don't expect we're going to see him. Local prosecutor there. The cops explained all the circumstances to him. He said, yeah, I think second-degree murder is appropriate for this case. So don't expect we'll be seeing that guy out on the street anytime soon. That was a very, very bad choice that he made. And there's been several discussions here over the last, of course it goes on all the time, but over the last week or two, there's been a lot of discussion about the use of lethal force and all that. And I say, you know, this is where your training money comes in. This is where it pays for itself right here, is going and getting professional, good, reputable, professional training. If you know how to shoot, that's fine. You're comfortable with that? Okay, I get that. I'm okay with that. If you've been, just because you have been, and I've said this a dozen times, but just because you were in the military, whatever branch, whatever thing, even in combat, doesn't mean, you know, the rules of engagement are very different. There are laws and considerations that you don't take into consideration in the jungles of Vietnam or the deserts of Iraq. There's things that the rules of engagement are quite different. The laws are quite different. Some of the things are similar, but there's some things that's where your professional training pays for itself. Even if you just take a sit down class and not a shooting class, if your state will allow that. Okay. I'm okay with that. You know how to shoot, but there's still some things that I think are critical to keep you out of jail and maybe keep you or others alive. And this guy could have done that if he just simply walked out of the house. I mean, how stupid was that? Left the house, went to his other house, got a gun, come back and just shot him. And I think that's the problem, a problem, with some of these stand your ground laws and stuff, is that people use this for an excuse. They look at it and see this. It's just like so many people in some of the classes that we have. We used to get this in Farmington quite often. Somebody said, well, if somebody does so-and-so, if they do this, can I shoot them? Wrong question. If, you know, the question would be, would I be justified if I, you know, if I feared for my life and this happened and I had to shoot, would it be justified? It's not, can I shoot? It's if I have to. If I must, am I going to get in trouble? It's not, can I? Can I shoot him and not get in trouble? Guys, we're not hunting prairie dogs here. This isn't a jackrabbit. It isn't a self-defense case against a bear out in the woods. Nothing. This is another human being. However sorry this individual may be, it's still a human being, and that changes the rules of engagement. But we used to get that question fairly regularly. So, like I said, even if it's not a shooting class, it's just a sit-down class learning laws, justification of the use of lethal force, things like that, safety, it's worth every penny. If there's only one little thing that you pick up that may help you to survive or keep you out of jail or keep you from spending your entire life savings, ruining your life, ruining your marriage, your relationship, breaking up your family, losing your job, destroying your business, is that not worth, if they just pick up one thing that helped with that, is that not worth spending a little money for personal defense training? Even if it's just a sit-down class and you don't have to shoot. Ideally, you know, constitutionally, I'm very uncomfortable with forcing people to do this. I think they should dangle a carrot in front of them and say, okay, if you want a permit, which will give you reciprocity in 36 states and there's a certain amount of legal defensibility, and if you want one, here's what you have to do. You have to sit through this class and you have to go out and shoot and demonstrate that you know which end the bullet comes out of. And that you don't hurt yourself and kill everybody around you that's big enough to die. That's what I would say. If you want a permit, this is what you have to do. So that way we get around the constitutionality of it and get people to have the desire to want to do this instead of being forced to do it. When they want to, I think they pay more attention and do better in the class than they do if they are forced to. There were so many people, so many times, usually older men. Once in a while, you'd see a woman do it, pretty rarely. Usually, upper middle age and older men would sit in that class in Farmington, in the classroom part of it. We were like 12 hours in the classroom. Interesting class, had a lot of fun, everybody enjoyed it. But some of the guys would sit there and they'd roll their eyes in the back of their head and they'd look around, tap their pencil, doodle on their little handout that I give them and draw a picture, look at their phone and all this stuff. And, usually when we get to a certain part of the class, which usually is included the part about taking a life, actually killing somebody, that's when people started to quit tapping the pencils and started sitting up in their seat and started looking around taking notes. But I think that it's well worth, and this guy probably could have done much differently if he had been taking the time to go and get some training there at some point. Let's see, there's another one here. Police respond to burglary alarm to find homeowner with loaded gun and drugs. Well, that's in Portland, Oregon, naturally. Officers said they found a loaded handgun, cash, and drugs. Yeah, we won't even get into that. That's just one of those things. All right. Well, I've just about had all the fun that I can stand. And, yeah, Tebow, you were a good student. Quite a bit different than a lot of them. But you saw, I know there's people in your class. There's people in every class, every single class that we did. And we did before I left Farmington. I wound up doing, I don't know, it seemed like something in the vicinity of 200, more or less, of those classes there. And every class there was somebody. We filled those classes up for several years. Filled them up with anywhere from 18 to 22 people every single weekend, just about for quite a while. And in virtually every class, there was somebody like that. All right. Well, like I said, I've had all the fun I can stand. So I think I'm going to ease on out of here. We'll be back Wednesday with a little more gun-related stuff. The survival tab order didn't get made today because I had several checks we had to wait on to clear, so it will be made tomorrow. If anybody still wants to do this and wants to do it over the through the online store, you can do it as long as you get it done before I order tomorrow. When I pick up the phone to order in the morning, I will take it off of the website. And we won't be able to do that anymore. It is a heck of a deal. We've had a good response to it. And we've got quite a good size order to put in tomorrow. But if somebody wants to order tonight or very first thing in the morning, then go to southwestshootingauthority.com, click on the online store, find your survival tabs, and get them ordered. All right. Let's see if I can get all this stuff moved over here. There we go. All right. How come you didn't go what I told you to do? Let's try this again. There we go. Now we got it. All right. We'll see y'all Wednesday. Thanks for...
Well... That wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me. No reconciliation.